Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. John Updike was already an established writer for The New Yorker magazine when he moved his family to Ipswich, Massachusetts in 1957. He said he went there in part to escape New York and in part to search for the middleness of America. But he also said he wanted to move closer to his hero, baseball player Ted Williams, and he eventually settled in a house on the typically Protestant-named Labor in Vain Road.
Updike spent 17 years in Ipswich at a time of great change in American society, and according to biographer Adam Begley, it was also the period of some of Updike's greatest triumphs as a writer. He wrote 8 of his more than 70 books there, the majority of his best short stories, and some of his most ambitious poetry.
He came to the North Shore a promising writer and left in 1974 as one of the country's greatest men of letters. So joining us now in the studio to talk more about John Updike's Ipswich years is Adam Begley. He's a writer and critic and author of the big new biography called Updike. He's also speaking tonight at the Boston Athenaeum on this very subject. Adam Begley, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello.
So first of all, I just want to ask you, I want to read a brief graph ends the chapter before we get into Updike's Ipswich years. And you say, basically, in 1957, when he left New York, fleeing the crowds and also the corrupting influence of a certain kind of big city sophistication, he was, in a half-hearted, conflicted way, trying to escape from the New Yorker as well. But what was it about Ipswich in particular that seemed an antidote to New York and the New Yorker?
Well, I'll deal with the town itself. Ipswich is a small town, and has a small town feel, and that's the kind of town that Updike grew up in Shillington, Pennsylvania. He loved that town, and when he moved to Ipswich, he said he was looking for a small town space in which to write.
And what could he achieve in a small town space that he wasn't able to achieve in New York?
In New York, the problem is, as he once put it, I think, whatever noise you make, someone else nearby is making an even louder noise. The other thing is that Updike was an only child, and he was very much of a solo performer. And The New Yorker, however wonderful it was as a platform for him, wasn't a solo thing. It was a corporate experience, and he wanted to be a single act.
Right. Well, you also write, you quote Updike, actually, in your biography of him, saying that he needed to reestablish his connection with the whole mass of middling, hidden, troubled America.
Well, I think that trouble just reads better in fiction than happiness. So, of course, he was looking for trouble. All writers are looking for trouble. But certainly New York didn't seem to him the center of things the way Shillington and Ipswich did.
It didn't seem the center of things.
No, the center of things for him is small town America. His most famous hero is Rabbit Angstrom,
right,
who is, from the little part of a small city in Pennsylvania right near Shillington called Reading. And he was, it's middle America that Updike was looking for, right, not New York's sort of more extreme version of America.
Middle America on the North Shore of Massachusetts in 1957 and then the following 17 years. It's interesting, though, because you do point out that while Updike and his family, his wife and children, formed a very close-knit, vibrant social circle, at least at the beginning of the time that he spent in Ipswich, he wasn't, by any means of the imagination, the most affluent of them. So who did he connect with? Who were the people that end up informing so much of the great fiction that he writes during his Ipswich years?
Well, there were a couple of doctors. There was a stockbroker. There was a couple of people who worked for the universities, one for Harvard and one for MIT. There was a lawyer or two. They were people who had some inherited money. He was definitely, at the beginning of the time, the poorest. By the time he left in 74, he was a wealthy man.
A very wealthy man by the time he left.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit more about how the particular people and what they did in Ipswich really went on to strengthen Updike as a writer, because you write about basically a type of Sunday ritual that forms that amongst his social circle that he felt really was sort of as you write, a sequel to the ritual of church.
Yes, the gang of about six couples, maybe sometimes stretching to eight, would get together on Sunday mornings and Sunday midday, and they would play sport together. They would play football, or they would play basketball, or they would play volleyball. And then after that, there would be drinks at one house or another, and they would all get there and get, you know, a little bit high, and then things would carry on until the kids got too hungry to ignore them, and then they would all troop off in various directions. But this group of friends that Updike formed in Ipswich in the early 60s were a very, very unusually close group of friends, and they saw each other every weekend, not just for sports, but for cocktails on Saturday night and Friday night. But it may have been the sports and the after-sports drinks that was the most important bond between them.
Well, it's interesting, because you point out in the book that this is all happening at a time in which there's this something of a great unwinding of American social strictures, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is reflected in Updike's writing that he produces in this period, such as the fact that, you know, there were infidelities going on.
Well, you know, the great line from Couples is, welcome to the post-pill paradise. The oral contraception comes in 1960, and suddenly there was an avenue towards infidelity that carried less risk and less burden. And within by the mid-60s, this group of Ipswich couples were all hopping in and out of each other's bed with pretty alarming frequency, and that shows up in Updike's fiction, first in the short stories and then famously in Couples, which was called the Anatomy of the Adulterous Society.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a little bit of tape here of Updike himself speaking about finding inspiration in reality to inform his fiction. It's a conversation that he had in 1996, so let's listen to that.
The image you create of life out of your own life is certainly inadequate and partial, but you would like to think, I would like to think, that it's been a fairly honest image, that what I have seen and felt, I've tried to describe fairly. I haven't tried to fake things I haven't seen and haven't felt.
Did any of the people that he was close to and whose lives may have somehow ended up in the pages of Updike's fiction, did they object to that?
You know, they got used to it fairly quickly. He would, the New Yorker came out once a week, and on Friday they would get it. And all his friends, all of Updike's friends, would search through to see whether there was a new Updike story, and then, of course, whether they were in it. Slightly disguised, but nonetheless recognizable. By the time Couples came around in 1967, they knew they were going to be in it. And apparently for months, the only activity on the North Shore was flipping through Couples and trying to figure out which character was who.
Well, it's good that they took it that way, because I can imagine that other people might not be so welcoming of having their lives, even if it's not their names, exposed in the work of someone who was becoming one of the most famous writers in America during this time.
You know, it was a kind of a thrill as well as kind of a shock.
Right. Well, finally, I'm just wondering, after 17 years, Updike eventually leaves Ipswich, you know, being this great man of letters in the United States. Is there any way to conjecture whether or not that flowering would have happened if he had stayed in New York or closer to New York?
That's an interesting hypothetical question, and I've actually never asked myself that question. I think that Updike was so fluent and so flexible as a writer that he would have made a great urban writer, a great New York writer. But we'll never know.
We'll never know. Well, Adam Begley is a writer and critic, and the new biography of his that he's put together is called simply Updike. It is a wonderful tour of one of America's greatest writers, John Updike. Adam Begley will be speaking tonight on this subject at the Boston Athenaeum. Thanks so much for joining us here at Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.